I'm clear about the objective. Run the race. Contribute my best. Tap into the collective genius of everyone else. We all are contributing something meaningful to this moment. Let's experiment. Let's identify folks who may be on the sidelines and feel like they're a victim of what's happening today. Let's cultivate conditions for them to be welcomed into something as generative contributors to be able to tap into a broader range of our collective genius.
Hey everyone, it's Hildy, and this is the Creating the Future podcast. I'm glad you've joined us here today. This is a place for us to explore what really creates social change. It feels like these days the work of creating a more humane world is more important than ever. Beyond reacting to the forces at play all around us, what will actually create the world we want to live in? That is the question at the heart of this podcast. I'm so excited to welcome Marcus Walton to the podcast today. If you know of Marcus at all, it's probably in his position as CEO of Grantmakers for Effective Organizations, most commonly known as GEO. But Marcus has been involved in philanthropy and social change since long before that, always with a focus on making philanthropy less transactional and more human. When I talk with Marcus, what stands out is far more than the roles he has held. It is his appreciation of all the interconnected layers that lead to true change. And so it is my pleasure to have Marcus Walton join me on the podcast today. Welcome, Marcus, to the podcast. I have been looking so forward to this conversation, so thank you for being with us today.
For sure, Hildy. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
I'm hoping that you can start out by just sharing a little bit about what is it in your life that led you to be so dedicated to creating change?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I can't say that I necessarily want to create change. Or intend to. I just can't seem to escape it, quite frankly. And this has always been the case. Hildy, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, born and raised. And raised amongst, at that time, kind of in the 70s and 80s, it was common for working class folks to identify as working class and to be able to support large families. So inside of the community, and my mom and dad both had 11 brothers and sisters. Yeah, that's pretty large even for them. And so all these aunts and uncles were my support system. And so I knew what it meant to be in a village kind of a dynamic, if you will, to be loved and nurtured and supported, but also to be constantly under scrutiny, to feel pressure. So why does this matter? Because as I grew and as I wanted to explore the world, there were certain push factors and pull factors inside of this very community of people who, quite frankly, I didn't want to disappoint. Right? And so this is a dynamic that we don't always consider. The fact that I wanted to see the world beyond the vision that they necessarily had for me became a point of tension. And so after high school, I went on to college, still in Ohio, but really exploring the world. I knew I wanted to be in some cities that were more urban in nature, bigger, less parochial. But what I didn't realize, Hildy, is that as soon as I was able to separate myself and kind of look back, reflect back on my experience, I realized a few things. For the most part, younger leaders weren't provided a broad range of opportunities to exercise leadership, to develop leadership. And so as much as I tried to return back to Cleveland and practice as an adult, as a young professional, the opportunities were scarce. And instead, there was a competitive type of environment with folks who had been in positions for much longer. And simultaneously, as this kind of dynamic was happening, I was noticing a deterioration of infrastructure in our community, as well as a transitioning of our economy. So we went from a very flourishing auto industry and still steel mill industry where that was providing all these opportunities to be able to raise a family with very little formal education. They left. And in place, we saw the increase in all of the things that contribute to the erosion of a social fabric, the drugs, the despondency, an interesting reaction by the people to cling to the past as opposed to prepare for a new future. And the sum total of all of that, Hildy, helped me appreciate that, you know what? It's important to be able to adapt to change. Change happens and it's ongoing. And my relationship to it might actually dictate the extent to which I can thrive. And it happened over time, but I saw it on a personal level. I saw it in a civic level, kind of looking at the community, looking at the physical infrastructure of this place that I loved so much. Paying attention to the mindset, some of the messaging that was coming out of those communities, coming from those leaders, and then ultimately from the society itself, being able to see as a professional with peers and experience firsthand. I was able to land an opportunity at the Cleveland Foundation. I was able to experience firsthand some of the dynamics that were not keeping pace with the kind of changes that were impacting our sector.
Wow. That is a dynamic story. That's sort of a river of a story.
If you think the story sounds dynamic, the impact on me is one that has invited, cajoled, and quite frankly forced me in some instances to release any notion of how I had imagined things to be and really be in the practice of acknowledging how things are unfolding in real time. And Hildy, I've learned, and you and I have talked about this a little bit before, I've learned that on a personal level, there's a set of practices that really serve me, call them rituals or ceremonies, that help me be able to digest this change, right? Make sense of change that's happening so frequently in a manner that's ongoing. And some folks call it grieving. Sometimes some will refer to it as metabolizing our trauma. It has all these fancy descriptions, but it's essentially acknowledging when I experience forces of disruption and reconciling that, going through a process of checking in on myself, the different aspects of my personhood to reach a new alignment. Let's call that clarity, coherency. Consider a set of next steps. Consider the adjustments that may serve me when it comes to an aspirational vision of life that is my North Star.
Beautiful. That whole concept that you were talking about in terms of changes ongoing and how do we adapt to it? What does it take for us to be part of that and flow with it?
Yeah.
You're leading right into the question at the heart of this podcast, which is when you do see change happening, whether that's within us as humans or out in the world, because they really are so similar, so much the same. What do you see as the factors that are undergirding that change? What are the factors that support change when it's happening?
You know, I'm going to invite you to co-create with me around this because the answer feels really complex. I feel like you asked one of those big existential ones. The thing that has served me best to appreciate change, which I define as the disruptive forces of life, the dynamic forces that contribute to our ongoing evolution. It happens on multiple levels. So first, it's complex. It's the definition of complexity. And so change happens on an individual level. Me as Marcus, the person, the human being with an emotional reality, a physical reality, and a mental reality that I express verbally. On each one of those areas, I'm paying attention to how change is happening, how I am responding to change, how I am noticing difference, and then using all of that to make sense of what's possible based upon those forces playing themselves out. That's a lot of work, and I hope that made sense in the shorthand. Then there's the interpersonal level. So that's personal. On the interpersonal level, I'm now doing that same thing. I'm attending to all of the levels of change that I'm experiencing personally, and I'm attending to how other people are experiencing change in their spaces, mentally, physically, energetically, and how they're expressing it verbally, how they're behaviorally responding to their experience of change on all of those levels, which is, as you can imagine, especially complex. It's hard enough to do that as an individual. And now, not only am I doing it with another person, I'm doing it with multiple people. And the more we combine those individuals, those relationships, the more we start to identify organizations, associations, structures, institutions. And so I'm naming change on that level as well. And then there's societal, there's a sector-wide, there's the kind of aggregate global level that change is happening. And in addition to those individual level changes, I'm tending to the changes that are happening on that level, making sense of what I'm observing, witnessing, feeling, and doing so as much as possible in comparison to what's happening on the interpersonal level and on the individual level. And so I have to wonder if there's a macro set of changes that happen universally. It's captured in a lot of our faith traditions. Mm-hmm. So what's essentially happening out in the cosmos, in nature, in the broader world, is happening on an individual level, on a micro level. I believe that. And so just like the earliest people on the planet have done, I pay attention to what's happening out there, what we have learned about that great cycle of change, and draw lessons on that. So, for example, change happens in cycles. The Earth revolves around the sun, and there are multiple suns and multiple planets and multiple galaxies. It serves me to zoom out when paying attention to these things playing out. Things become clearer the more I see the big picture. I take the time to consider the big picture. So in other words, don't get lost in the tunnel vision experience of discomfort, for example, that I may be experiencing. Acknowledge it and zoom out and appreciate the context within which it's happening.
Yeah. That word context, we play with big picture, small picture, but the reality is, are we looking at the whole context or just a small part of the context?
That's right. And then in the society in which we live, and there have been so many people who try to articulate this in different ways, there's a way in which we can only pay attention to the context itself without making sense of our relationship to it. And we can also pay attention to my experience of the context without considering the bigger picture. So this opportunity to look at the both and, as opposed to either this or that, again, the acknowledgement of complexity, layers, nuance, that always, Hildy, in my practice so far, my experience, consistently allows for a set of possibilities to remain available, despite what might feel like or be perceived as the most duress or adverse circumstances.
The word fractal is coming to mind for me.
There you go. There you go.
What we see in the cosmos is what we see in ourselves. To go Joni Mitchell on us, we are stardust.
Yeah, that's right. Our systems change colleagues say that, right?
They
use fractals all the time. And that's what I also express that too in what I share with you.
When you're talking about these various levels, you're talking about sense making, you're talking about noticing, and it is what we notice on the individual level, what we notice on the macro level, acknowledging that when we're creating change, it's humans, individual humans, who are changing within that.
despite the fear of getting a bit esoteric. But what you just described about this human experience to me is one of the most fundamental expressions of what it means to be a contributor to society. And yet, the social, political, and economic constructions of identity that categorize us simultaneously dehumanize us. It makes it less possible, more challenging for me to connect with my own humanity as well as someone else's, because of I'm considering all of these hierarchies. I'm thinking about your gender, your race, which isn't even real. It is one race, a human race, and a whole bunch of different cultural expressions and right, ethnicities, and the whole diaspora of human experience that has shaped how we think, how we consider what's normal, the rituals we practice. And yet, because of the pace of change, because of the overarching social dynamic, our reality, we don't necessarily consider that. And we're not encouraged to on a daily basis. Instead, our priorities focus on advancement of something that's associated with the structure in which we live, this capital-focused structure. So even from the earliest stage, we're educating ourselves to be able to access a certain level of financial opportunities, whether it's creating a business or working a job at another type of entity to express what one might call our personal vocation. So we're trying to match up the thing we care most about with a particular type of financial opportunity to allow us to thrive, at least economically, inside of this social construction, which is what it is. But our society, nonetheless, the one that is the prevailing way of being together that we've all agreed on to date.
It's fitting into a current system, global system, that is not really human. I mean, it's very mechanized.
It's mechanized, and it has a history. There's a set of experiences over time that have encourage certain behaviors and discourage others.
I mean, it's seeing humans as machines, seeing humans as pieces in the production line.
For some. And maybe the majority don't see humans as machines. But again, the agreement we've made, the social compact, which is implicit for the most part, is that we've all bought into this system that tends to have that way of engaging with other human beings and more transactional.
How do you see that, Marcus? How do you see that fitting into how we approach social change?
Because if we don't understand the agreements that we've made, there are so many implicit agreements that once made explicit, then we can reclaim our agency. And so some of the role of social change and why I care about it so much in terms of my particular contribution is that I have experienced already through my training, through my practice, through my career, I've had the opportunity of experiencing how individuals, how people are impacted in the most, not always negative, but the most intense dynamic impact can be from those things. Let's use disappointment. Disappointment for me and from most people that I know tends to be a result of unspoken expectations not being met. That's the micro. So let's take it to the macro. From that practice, my default is to ask the question of what are the expectations guiding this social dynamic? How many of them are expressed and shared? How many of them are unspoken and still guiding expectations in the group? It plays out every time, Hildy. So for any kind of social change agenda, the first thing that I do is make sure that we are considering the multiple levels within which change are happening, individual, interpersonal, and this broader global group dynamic. once we understand the various layers, then we go about the work of naming the agreements. What are the promises that we've made? What are the rules of engagement? If agreements doesn't work for you, that's what we're talking about. There's rules of engagement whenever more than one human being is involved in a situation. And it's purposeful. It's so that we're focused. Right? Institutions have structures that are built on purpose to fulfill a function. But we haven't been the ones necessarily to define the function of the institutions. And that's where you were talking about the mechanization of human beings. And so social change work creates space for us to revisit these starting assumptions, these working agreements, these rules of engagement, the things that we consider normal that we maybe never have thought about a different way because we were just socialized into it from the earliest point that we engaged other human beings in a society that tends to be some kind of educational environment, K through 12.
Yep.
And so they're not neutral. K through 12 is not a neutral space. It's a socializing force. And quite frankly, in many ways, it serves us to deprogram ourselves from that experience in order to consider what else is possible. Because institutions reinforce the status quo to perpetuate the social compact that is driving business as usual.
How are you seeing this? Because it's so much a part of what GEO is about, is busting those assumptions, those expectations, sort of deprogramming, this is the way we've always done things. How are you seeing that within the work that GEO is doing?
Thankfully, GEO is a group of folks who for 27 years now have been interested in considering a different way, a more effective way of approaching institutional grantmaking. Sometimes we refer to that as considering the ways in which the practice of institutional grantmaking can be a lever for social progress, for the greater good. Not just in allocation of charitable resources, but also leadership and influence and elevating some of the topics that you and I are talking about that go way beyond a simple grant to a grantee that is providing a service inside of communities, but really starts to shape a shared vision for thriving for society itself. And in today's times, quite frankly, there's so many conversations around the threat of authoritarianism and so many other dynamics. There's the questions around government and self function, purpose. There's an absence of conversation around values. There's a lot of reactions to what are being perceived as a breach of decorum from leadership. All of these are agreements. And so GEO is a place where we can make sense of that together, where we can acknowledge misalignment and draw from resources that are curated in such a way that allow us to be able to do what I'm doing with you right now, right? Whether you agree with it or not, that's not required. What's required is you care about social progress and you want to contribute to it meaningfully. And so having a platform to do that with grant makers who have varying levels of resources available to them, but who collectively care about the greater good, it contributes to a sense of hope that extends way beyond what's possible if I go it alone. Mm-hmm. And we want to be a beacon of sorts, a place where others can breathe a little easier, rest, relax into other groups of people who are doing similar, if not the same work, and restore to stay in the game because we understand that change is ever present, it's ongoing, it's cyclical, perhaps generational. And so we're contributing. We are part of that relay race. We're grabbing the baton, we're running our part, and then we're handing it off. And so we want to facilitate that process across generations of grant makers.
What does that look like in practice for some of the folks who are members of GEO or who are working in partnership with GEO? What does that actually look like in practice?
That's a good question. We do a lot of cohort work, building. So form follows function for us. And we appreciate that this relational way of viewing the world, appreciating that change also between and within relationship happens at the speed of trust, right? And so we are intentional in our efforts to generate trust between individuals who command certain levels of resource, who demonstrate certain levels of agency, who have a particular set of insights. And so power, if you will, the ability to realize their economic, political, and social aims and goals. We are about bringing people together to identify the various forms of power that are available, because we are often not accessing all of them, to be able to partner and contribute to a collective deployment of resources, appreciating that the sum of our individual parts are much greater than those individual parts, and to consider broader possibilities. And Hildy, at least in my experience and what we've learned through GEO, is that there's something that happens whenever groups of human beings focused on what's possible come together and make space for that. We allow, remember everyone was talking about vulnerability and courage? When we are willing to consider a different way, despite what we see and what we believe, we leave room for something else to be possible. GEO creates spaces, platforms, resources, reports, articles, messaging, and even makes ourselves available for the kinds of confidential conversations that are a little more sensitive, directly about a kind of vulnerability that someone may be experiencing, but all to provide a space for that metabolizing of change, that digesting of all of these dynamics that are coming at us fast and furious sometimes and feel overwhelming. Appreciating that overwhelming feeling, that change is happening at a pace and rate that is more than I can digest at any particular point in time. Appreciating that, that's often referred to as trauma. And so we want to be a space that increases that metabolic capacity, to take an analogy way too far. But we're saying, like, together we can help you make sense of all of that change. You don't have to do it alone. And therefore, from a place that's more grounded, that's more secure, we can consider a set of next steps based upon that vision of ours. And quite frankly, we want to refine that vision and encourage folks to revisit that, to establish a different relationship with a vision. Even though it's aspirational, for example, it doesn't mean you have to wait for something else to change your mindset. You can adjust your attitude right now.
So much of our work at Creating the Future is rooted in brain science. And I'm really homing in on your focus on possibility and creation rather than focusing on what the problem is. Mm-hmm. What happens in our brains when we focus on the problem is we get into a reactive mode.
Yeah, fight or flight.
It's that part of the brain that really does not have a whole lot of capacity for thought. It has almost zero capacity for rational thought. That's in the frontal lobe. But we've got that reflexive part of the brain that when we focus on what's wrong, that's why we disagree when we're talking about what's wrong. Well, it's this thing. No, I think it's this thing. But when we're focused on what's possible, we bypass that fear center and we access all of the wisdom, all of the creativity. And so I'm really appreciating the focus on possibility and future and vision that you're expressing, rather than the, okay, let's hunker down and look at, you know, this current circumstance is scary to a lot of people. And that's keeping us from that brilliance that we have.
Exactly. If I may, you just touched on something that is cultural. So I've been describing culture without using that term. All of those starting assumptions, those norms, those values, principles, rituals, the ways in which we typically approach responding to what we understand as situations that require a decision. And the thing that I wanted to offer about culture is there is a predominant culture within which we're living societally. And if I can offer a different way of thinking about it, to a certain degree, just talking about things in terms of like white supremacy, this and that, gets us locked into a very real conversation around inequities that has a historical nature. And there's more. The more that I'll add is that we live inside of a clinical culture. And so you think about what's practical and not what's possible. When we are making sense of our experience, we pause in this moment and say, oh my gosh, this thing has happened to me. Or I can't believe that happened. And then, Hilda, we turn around and we start describing all the things that happened to us, as opposed to acknowledging from a place of pausing, momentary acceptance, emotional acceptance of like, oh my goodness, these forces of disruption are impacting me on all of these levels in all of these ways. And so how might I maneuver through what I'm experiencing in order to continue to move toward my aspirational vision? When I'm just making sense of what I went through, like I'm just coloring in of the past, it's not advancing me. I'm becoming an expert on the description of my journey. But I'm not moving closer to the way of living, the elements of life. Don't even get me started on how we define life. We don't even know what this thing is. But there's a purpose that I'm living out, right? I am attempting to self-actualize. We are attempting to self-actualize, some of us unconsciously. And what we're saying at GEO, what I'm saying as through my individual practice, what the community of folks that I consider colleagues and peers are saying is, it serves us to bring a conscious awareness to how we're moving through the world in the face of these disruptive forces out of a desperate desire to self-actualize, to live out our purpose, to experience meaning in both on a personal level and through every relationship and institutional affiliation that we accumulate over a lifetime.
And that so much comes back down to the context. When I'm just picturing that the context, when we have that very, very narrow context of this is what happened to me. It's a very narrow context. When the context includes possibility of, because all of our contexts include possibility, the possibilities are there. When it includes possibility, it really shifts the way we feel and react and respond inside.
Absolutely. And I the saving grace for me has been, it forces me as an invitation. It forces me to acknowledge what I don't know. And the more I know, I don't know about you, but the more I know, the more I seem to not know about that same thing. It's just like, there's so much unknown. It's so much unknown, in fact, that there is a particular kind of way that we could say, you know what, I'm very accustomed to operating in uncertainty because it has dominated my experience over the years, regardless of how long we've lived. There's more that we don't know than what we do know. And what we do know is, so that means it's smaller. If I only live, Hildy, according to the things that I've defined as known, then that's a very small life. And yet that's exactly what we do. We call it security. And we try to derive optimal pleasure out of that, optimal fulfillment, optimal fill in the blank. It is not going to happen. What is guaranteed is disappointment and perhaps disillusionment, maybe a little resentment.
All of which we are facing right now. If you just look at us, whether you're looking at us societally or as a nonprofit sector or as individuals who are afraid to pick up the news anymore, I'm blown away by, we are so used to living in uncertainty. We don't think about it like that.
We don't think about it like that. But guess who does? The person that we refer to as the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur says, like, let's try this. It's not just randomly. We're making an assessment. We're gathering information and making the most sense of it as we possibly can to point us in a direction. But then it serves us to be able to experiment, to test and learn, and allow that to inform our next decision in a similar situation. Like, so it's not complete dark. We're not operating at 100% ignorance. We're operating at a majority of, like, not knowing what we don't know. But we can always take a step forward or take a step to the side. We don't always have to go forward. Sometimes you take a step back so you can take a leap forward. Sometimes you take a leap back and then you take a whole quantum leap forward. This movement is one of the primary aspects of living. They say when a thing stops moving, it dies. Mm-hmm. Right? And so why wouldn't, on some level, that be true for us? Right? Let's keep experimenting, keep trying things out based upon what we observe, some insight that we've been able to accumulate, and connect with others who have been doing similar experiments. Thus, and that's why possibility works. Possibilities give us opportunities to experiment individually, collectively, and continue to expand different pathways forward.
You know,
knowing this doesn't offer that.
I have a friend who went through some pretty significant health issues in the past year. Mm-hmm. And there's a ton of uncertainty when, you know, you may die when it's that serious. And she shared with me a mantra that has blown me away. I have to be really honest, has blown me away. And this is coming from someone, our organization is called Creating the Future.
And when he laid in your eyes, when
Elaine shared this with me, it just opened my eyes up. And that is, future me knows how to do this.
Oh, I like that.
I mean, just facing the uncertainty, but to be able to step into that future and to look back and to say, future me knows how to do this.
Can I offer one of my versions of that just continuously fills me up with hope and inspiration? So I operate off of a kind of ontological practice that says now is the only moment we can act. Right, the past has happened already, and the future hasn't happened yet. The future is now. All right, actually, it's right now. See how it keeps, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if now is the only moment I can act, then now is actually the point where I have the most power. So let's focus on now, because the future hasn't happened yet and the past is gone. And so first of all, I'm managing my energy, my attention. Consciousness, the consciousness that I have that I can direct toward all in any direction, I'm focusing on the now. So now I'm building up my sense of power. What you described as future me reminds me of a saying that whenever two or more of us come together, there am I. It's a revelatory experience that has been captured in all kinds of different kind of mystic systems, energy practices, religious faiths. So there's some kind of consciousness that is expanded when two individual sources of consciousness come together. It's an exponential impact, bigger than the sum of the individual parts. And so being in community with intention has that same impact that you described as that future self. So when things look dark, when they feel uncertain, when I can't digest all of the change that I'm experiencing at any particular point in time, what I know will happen if I connect with someone else is that there will be more available in terms of being able to power, right? The ability to respond and realize my social, economic, and political goals and aspirations. Dr. King said that. I'm using his definition of power from Why We Can't Wait. But that being able to connect with others and then as human beings, right, beyond the constructions of race, age, gender, and all of the economic, being able to say, there's a human being, let me understand what they're going through. Let's connect and around the things that we have in common. That then creates more opportunity for possibility. It has done so every time, Hildy. It doesn't matter who the person is or what their affiliation may be. That's the hope for me.
Yeah. And what you're talking about really is, what does it take to rely on those relationships, to trust that those relationships will work out? There's, you know, looking at the mistrust that we see among ourselves, I really see that as, we like to talk about division and polarization. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In my mind, so much of that is just a mistrust of each other and not knowing each other and a mistrust of each other.
Yeah, and it's a dependency, if you will, to some degree on the past. Again, trying to desperately operate from the known. But the reality for me is that it was much worse here in this country for my great, 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 great. They weren't even viewed as human beings, right? They were exploited in ways that we haven't even acknowledged as a society yet. It's not just about labor. I'm talking about abuse on every level, right? And I don't know how to even reconcile that. But I know that in order to move toward a shared vision for thriving as a society, that kind of reconciliation has to take place somewhere. Yeah. Or we won't be able to move past it.
Yeah. Well, and I'm really focusing in on your comment that now is the only moment I can act. The sequel to that is, and my only power is to create what's next, because I can't change the past. And the past is what created this moment now, just as, yes, as you said, well, now, oh, no, now is the future. Oh, now is the future. That there really is no now. that we've got the past, and that our only power really is to create what is possible.
And Hildy, what an honor. In some ways, if I'm searching for purpose and I consider a framework like you just laid out, what it means to me is my contribution during the time that I'm here, which I don't know how long it is, right? As much as we don't never like to necessarily think about that. I don't know how long I'm going to be here. But the fact that the conditions from the past generations have all culminated to this moment, I have the baton now with you and others. I know what my mission is. I'm clear about the objective. Run the race. Contribute my best. Tap into the collective genius of everyone else that's a part of this culmination. We all are contributing something meaningful to this moment. And if we haven't yet, let's experiment. Let's be entrepreneurs, operate for possibility, and identify folks who feel like they are not contributing, who may be on the sidelines and feel like they're a victim of what's happening today. Let's cultivate conditions for them to be welcomed into something as generative contributors to be able to tap into a broader range of our collective genius. Collective genius is our collective consciousness. It's everyone saying, I'm here. I was born. Here's my offering. Boop, here's my contribution. We're co-creating. So I have hope in all human beings. I think we are created perfectly because of our capacity for redemption. I don't know one human being who hasn't made a set of mistakes, quote unquote mistakes, which is really just learning. And from that learning, become a different version of themselves. And so because that exists, again, I have even more hope that when we cultivate the right conditions, and we have to figure out what that is together, then we can invite a broader range of contributions from a wide swath, the diaspora of, if you will, the human diaspora. And then you tell me what's possible and what's not. Until we do that, no one knows.
I could not find a better place for us to stop today than that. And I am quite sure that the folks listening are in the same shoes that I am, wanting to know more from you, Marcus. So thank you so much for sharing yourself with us today. It is always an honor to talk to you, and I so appreciate it.
Thank you for the invitation. Thank you for allowing me to feel seen, to feel heard, to feel valued. I think that's what we all want, and I'm interested in offering that to as many people out there who also feel like they have something meaningful to contribute and maybe don't feel like they have been provided that invitation. Please allow this to stand as that invitation wherever you are. We need you. You matter. We love you.
Thank you, Marcus, so much.
Thank you, Hildy. Take care.
I'm so grateful to Marcus for sharing his observations with us. I appreciate how Marcus weaves the threads together of the various ways to focus on change, from the individual level to the interpersonal level to the neighborhood level and beyond. Understanding that change happens simultaneously at all those levels helps us to see what it really takes to create the future we want to live in. We can't create change as a society unless we acknowledge that it's individual people and then interrelated groups of those people who will create that change. What do all those individuals and groups need in order to create the future we want for all of us who share this planet? During the times we're all living through right now, I especially appreciate Marcus's observation that we are more accustomed to living in uncertainty than we think. That change is ongoing, and we're always adapting to it, and that there is always far more that we do not know than we do know. There's power in reminding ourselves, I've been through uncertainty before and succeeded. I can do it again. You can learn more about Marcus's work at the podcast page for this episode. And of course, if this episode got you thinking, we hope you'll share this podcast with your friends and colleagues and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, you can learn more about Creating the Future's work at creatingthefuture.org. Thank you for being with us today and for wanting to create a better future for our world. We'll see you next time here at Creating the Future.